Hey, everybody. Okay. Well, I have some good news. I was reading a blog this week, another guy's blog, and it turns out that having your shirt tucked in is cool again. But really cool is kind of messily tucked in, not crisp. So, there you go. Did we find a middle ground? All right. Well, before I start, I want to give you fair warning, especially those of you who are here for the first time. We sometimes in our worship services, we actually have small group discussion, and we're going to do that today. And I know for some people that's a scary idea, so I wanted to give you, you know, a good chunk of time to get emotionally prepared for that. If it's really, really uncomfortable, feel free to, you know, get some coffee and then go to the bathroom and get some more coffee. And it won't last long, 5 minutes or so. Okay, a couple of weeks ago, I confessed to you all that I am not a particularly good gift giver. I talked about the year of used Christmas presents. Truth be told, I'm not even a very good gift getter. When I was in eighth grade, this is kind of embarrassing. I'm really letting you into my world here. Eighth grade, I was still a really big fan of G.I. Joe action figures. In fact, I mean, if I'm going to be really honest, well into high school, me and my buddies would set up our G.I. Joe bases, you know, and we'd each get like 30 figures and stand them up on their base. And then we'd take about 100 rubber bands each, and we would... And the last person to have a G.I. Joe figure still standing was the winner of the battle. So, yeah, well into high school. Okay, I did it in college once or twice. Okay, so Christmas, eighth grade year. I'm making out my Christmas list, and I was actually proud of the fact that... it was all one page, single space, font the size of a phone book. Right there, at the top of my list, the one thing I really, really wanted my eighth grade year was the G.I. Joe hovercraft. Look at that thing. Dual fan propellers, missiles that really launched. Right side depth charge release. It had a landing ramp that launched the bike and recon sled. The hovercraft rocked. And it was the top thing on my Christmas list. Now, there was a lot of other stuff on the list, too. And you know, I made a lot of noise about all that stuff, too. Probably too much. Because Christmas morning rolled around. And as usual, just, you know, 100 presents under the tree and... one big box for me and one big box for my brother. So we run in and, you know, start dividing the presents up. And you had to wait your turn. We did one at a time all around the family. And then mom and dad's presents were done. Me and my brother kept taking turns. So, and we saved the big ones for last. And we get down to, you know, the big ones. And I go first. And I'm holding it. It's almost too good to be true. I don't even want to open it just yet. Finally, I can't wait any longer. And I rip all the paper off and I look at the box, and there is the G.I. Joe troop transport. It had a turret gun. Well, as if that wasn't bad enough, as I'm sitting there looking at this box, in kind of a daze, really, all of a sudden my brother starts yelling, "Woo!" And he opens his box, and there's the hovercraft. My childhood died in that moment. Well, I looked over the rest of my presents for a few minutes, and then I wandered off to my room, and I remember looking at my mom going, "How could you?" So like I said, I'm not really a very good gift getter either. But you know what? Maybe I was a pretty typical kid. Maybe you've had experiences like that in your own family. My parents really tried. In my family, Advent was a pretty big deal. We had an Advent wreath, and you know, every Sunday we would light one of the candles, and my dad would read the story, and my parents really tried. Christmas Eve was always a big night, and we would gather around. My dad would read the stories, and my mom would play the piano, and we'd sing some Christmas carols, and then go to church. They really tried. But you know, to be honest, for me, Advent and Christmas, what it really boiled down to, it was all about me. It was all about what I wanted, what I got. That was about it. So this morning, we're starting a series looking at Advent and asking ourselves, what's Advent really about? Why do we do this in the church? Why do we have this Advent season? What's the purpose, and how do we live in that purpose the best we can? So we're starting with the story of Zacharias and his wife Elizabeth and their coming baby, John. And this is a really interesting story that has a lot of fascinating points that I think set us up for where we're going, this journey towards the Advent conspiracy over the next 4 weeks. So I want to spend a little time this morning looking at this one particular story. First of all, I want to start with Elizabeth. The angel comes to Zechariah and says, God has heard your prayer. Now, right there, that says something to me that they've been praying, probably for a while, very fervently, for something. And that something is for Elizabeth's barrenness, her inability to have a child. Now, in that culture that they grew up in, really, in an unfortunate and kind of crass way, a woman's main function in society was to have children. And a woman who couldn't do that was, in a very real way, almost considered useless. Now, never mind the fact that more often than not, it was probably the man's fault in that culture, and with the understanding that they had, a woman who couldn't have children was, in a very real sense, useless. In fact, Elizabeth uses the word disgrace. For her, it's a disgrace to not be able to do this thing. So her barrenness is really the inability to have children. It's a physical barrenness. She was lacking that ability to do the thing that provided meaning in her life. But God provided. The angel comes and says, God has heard your prayer and promises a baby to her. They're to name the baby John. And in that moment, Elizabeth discovers that God gives her the thing that creates meaning in life. Gives her a reason, a purpose. Gives her significance. So I want to ask the question, what's our barrenness? What are we missing that would give us life, that would give us meaning? That would give us significance. And in this Advent season, all too often, what's missing is exactly that. It's meaning. Because the meaning and the purpose of Advent gets hijacked by a culture that's all about getting stuff. And so, a season where we have an amazing opportunity to look at giving, to talk about giving, gets short-circuited to be focused on getting. And there's a small difference. In order to get something, someone has to give it to you. How do we end up on the getting end, though? So we'll be looking at our barrenness over the next 4 weeks. We'll be talking about ways to deal with our barrenness. I'll come back to that. I love what Elizabeth does in response to this gift that God gives her. I mean, if it were me, and I had this thing that was my disgrace this thing that, you know, everybody whispered about when they talked about me when I wasn't there, and all of a sudden God lifted it, I'd want to go run out in the streets and celebrate. I'd want to say, woohoo, guess what? I'm not a disgrace anymore. I mean, my brother, I got an email from him a couple of weeks ago announcing, they're telling us that, that his wife's going to have a baby girl. We share the news, and it's exciting. But Elizabeth does something amazing to me. She goes into seclusion. She gets quiet. She stops. Right there's a clue for us about how to approach this coming Advent season. I want to show you a little video that talks about that. Some of the people that helped start this Advent conspiracy idea. And just to hear their take on it a little bit.
As the holidays draw near, you can almost feel this sense of dread in people when the first Christmas retail things begin to roll out in the stores. It's as if this internal metronome within us that kind of dictates the pace of life and the way we talk and the pace that we walk starts to turn up, that we feel like there are all these things to get done and parties to be planned and food to be prepared. And we become busier at the time that we should become slower, that we should stop more often to see what God's doing in the world, to recognize that God's given us people around us that we love and that love us, and that we have an opportunity to share and to celebrate with them. And the greatest enemy to that taking place is this internal pace that drives us, that pushes us forward. And so I'm asking you in these holy days to stop, to end the busyness, and just to be present. To see the people that God's put right before your eyes, the needs that God's put right before your eyes, and to act on those. As you feel this internal pace within you getting faster and faster, your list of things to do gets longer, your anxiety for things undone continues to grow, I pray that you could slow things down, that you could stop and remember what it is we're celebrating, and consider how Christ would have us celebrate his birth. One thing I'm sure of is that it would not be filled with stress and anxiety, but instead would be filled with this sense of peace. That's what was declared, that one was coming that would bring peace to the earth. And yet, in the celebration of his birth, we experience too often anything but peace. And if we dial things back a bit and begin to truly celebrate in our hearts, that's going to flow over into a true kind of gift giving, a true kind of sharing of our lives, our stories, and all of who we are. That would be worthy of the kind of celebration that the birth of Christ deserves.
That makes me think of the general atmosphere in my home around Christmas, especially as the days got closer. The stress, the anxiety, the tension. My mom wanted so bad Christmas to be a meaningful time. She tried so hard. And I think at the end of it, she was so beat and so dead. I wish she could have found more peace. I wish I could have helped her have some peace. Because, yeah, most of it was my fault. Well, you know what? For the people of Israel, the people that this angel came to speak to, their barrenness was more of a spiritual lostness. In fact, in verse 16, it says that John will come to turn the people's hearts back to God. We can kind of guess from that that even though these were the people of God, these were his chosen people, they were his, and God was their God. Even still, their hearts were somewhere else. Their hearts were focused on something other than God and God's values. And so in that, God sends John. In that, God sends somebody to help them, these people who were not looking for God. They weren't looking for God to break into their world and transform everything. They didn't even know what to look for. And yet here comes John. It says in verse 17, to make ready a people prepared for the Lord. To make ready a people prepared for the Lord. John was sent to get them ready for Jesus, who was coming. As we head into Advent, it officially starts next Sunday. As we head into Advent, that's our purpose. That's what this is all about. It's to get us ready. I heard somebody describe Christ's birth as the starter pistol. Everything that God does redemptive in the world starts at that moment. Are you ready for it? That's what Advent is. A time to prepare ourselves for Christ. A time to make our hearts ready for Christ to come in and redeem us. So our goal for Advent is to celebrate this season in a way that's worthy of that baby born on Christmas Day. Our hope is that Advent will be a time that prepares you to receive the good gifts of God in Christ. Now, Zacharias had his doubts. He didn't quite believe it. Now, I've tried to put myself in his shoes, and first of all, when I think of angels, you know, I mean, most of us think of nice, warm, shiny, white creatures with wings that are pleasant to look at. But every time angels show up, the first thing they say is peace, because they scare the stuff out of people. They scare people so bad that the first thing they have to say is, peace, it's all right. So I'm willing to forgive Zacharias for doubting. Because, you know, if one of those showed up in front of me, I don't think I'd be able to think straight. But Zachariah doubted. He says, how can this be? My wife's really old. He basically, the modern translation for that is, whatever. But you know what? I want to talk about doubt for a minute. Because I think doubt is a really important part of what happens in Advent. There were some recently published letters and diaries of Mother Teresa. It's astounding to read in there just some brutal honesty about someone who you would think would have it nailed when it comes to trust. It's trusting God, peace, meaning in life. Here's what she said, though. Just one small sample. Where I try to raise my thoughts to heaven, there's such convicting emptiness that those very thoughts return like sharp knives and hurt my very soul. Love, the word, it brings nothing. It's amazing to me that this woman who gave so much for others, who so completely embodied the values of God, she struggled with doubt as much as I do. So Zacharias doubts. Next week, we're going to look at Mary, who meets an angel, and she also says, how can this be? She doubts. We'll also look at the stories of Simeon and Anna, who sat maybe for years in the temple waiting. I'm sure they doubted. The very people of Israel, this nation, for hundreds and hundreds of years, sat basically occupied, owned by another country, waiting. Bet they doubted. Do you ever doubt? You ever feel like it would be awfully easy just to give up on this whole faith thing? Have you ever had a moment like that, like Mother Teresa had, where your deepest prayers feel like they're bouncing off the ceiling? If so, this time is for you. When they doubted, God met them. Here's another way doubt may creep in. You may find yourself doubting whether there's any way to get around it, whether there's any way to change how this season feels. You may be sitting there doubting how it's going to go if you spend less on your kids. You may be doubting your kids' ability to get that idea that giving is more important. Well, here's what I think. When I look back on what Advent was for me, I want more than that for my kids. I want more than that for you. My prayer for each of us is that we can take a good hard look at what our lives are really about during this Advent season and ask if there's another way. My prayer is that we can embrace what is good and right and beautiful about Christmas and rethink the things that are distracting or discouraging, maybe even hurtful. Advent is really a journey. It's this movement towards that moment when Christ breaks into the world and into our lives. And at the end of that journey, I really hope and pray that we will have made a place, that we will have prepared our hearts to receive Christ. So that's why we are inviting you to join us in this Advent conspiracy, to try something new, to prepare our lives for the one that is coming. Let me tell you a little bit about the Advent conspiracy. This is a growing movement from churches across the country that are much like the baby John in our story this morning, focusing on preparing our hearts for Christ. It's a conspiracy because we're conspiring to be agents of change. We're conspiring to live a different way, to do something different, to not settle for what is, to not settle for the status quo, but to be like Jesus. The Advent conspiracy is refusing to settle for a holiday season that misses the point. So for the next 4 weeks, we're going to be looking at a variety of different ways that we can celebrate Advent in a way that's worthy of Christ. Now our purpose, let me be real clear, our purpose is not to bash anyone's holiday traditions. If you ever feel threatened by these ideas, that is not our intent. Because there is sacred and beautiful moments in all the things that we do. But our purpose is to cut right to the heart of it and ask, what are we really about? And what are we really communicating to our families and the world around us? Now, the vision of the Advent conspiracy is printed in your bulletins. You can see kind of the main themes, and you can read a little bit about what we're trying to do. Over the next several weeks, we're going to be hitting on those themes in various ways. We'll be looking at ways for your family to keep worship at the heart of your Advent experience together. We'll also be challenging each other to rethink how much money we actually spend at Christmas. And maybe you've already spent all your money for Christmas. Hopefully you still have your receipts. Just kidding. We can do this in phases over a couple of years if we need to. Did you know that the average American doesn't get out of debt from Christmas bills until August the following year? Just in time for my birthday. But we're not talking about being a bunch of Grinches who, you know, don't give gifts. In fact, we'll spend a good bit of time talking about how to give more. But when we say give more, we're going to be talking about giving gifts that matter more. Giving relational gifts. Gifts that carry personal meaning. Maybe homemade gifts. But the focus will be on giving. Chris Sia, the guy that you saw on that video, he had a great idea at his church last year where he recruited a bunch of people in the church to dress up as Santa Claus, as Saint Nick, and to go door-to-door, to go to the homes of families with children in their church on Christmas Eve. But instead of dropping off gifts, they picked up gifts to take to the needy. You'll hear a little more about that next week. So we'll be talking about giving more. And lastly, because we're going to spend less money this year, we'll have the ability to maybe give a little more financially through our church's efforts to love our neighbor, to love those that we've been called to serve and care for. Maybe we'll be introducing some new ideas or revisiting some old ones about how we can be a church that shows the love of Christ in our community and in our world. You'll hear more about that too. But again, I just want to remind you that the whole purpose behind this is to celebrate Advent and Christmas in a way that's worthy of Jesus. I wonder what Jesus would think if he walked into a mall surrounded by stuff, surrounded by things that are stores trying to get you to buy, listening to kids cry because, I want that, Mom, I want that, I've got to have that. And then to hear the greeter at the door say, Merry Christmas. Talk about a clash of values. So this Advent season, we're just examining our values. I hope you'll join us in this journey. Each week we'll take it a little bit further. We'll talk about it a little more deeply. Also, something I'd like to invite you to is every Sunday at 9 o'clock, 9 a.m., we have what we call coffee and conversation. And we'll be spending that time focusing on some of those specific ideas. We'll be talking about ways to live it out, ways to do it. So if you really want to jump into this journey, that would be a great time to come and bring your family. The kids will be talking about it next door. And we'll be looking at ways we can do this together as the family of God.